We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank. Up next, the latest on the K-State Wildcats from the guys of Three Maw. John Kurtz, Derek Young, and Cole Manbeck. Who will get you caught up on all things Wildcats from a collective perspective that can't be found anywhere else? The latest news, the top stories, and an insider perspective to keep you in the know. Three Maw is proudly presented by 360 Vodka. And now, let's begin the show.
Hello and welcome into another episode of Three Maw. I am John Kurtz, joined by Derek Young from K-State Online, Cole Manbeck, former beat writer for the Manhattan Mercury. And we are talking about dudes today. K-State's got dudes. They got another one out of the portal. This time it is Tyler Perry, a guard from North Texas, the Conference USA Player of the Year from last year, and as highly regarded as the number two player in the portal per The Athletic. This is a huge land for the Wildcats, and we are going to break all of that down, plus the Max Asemus recruitment. K-State misses out there, and Keyonte has declared for the draft but still has some college eligibility, so a lot of loose ends to tie up personnel-wise with what's going on with the Cats right now. But first, we need to make sure we thank our great sponsor, Holiday Distillery. Stock up on your 360 vodka, stock up on your Ben Holiday bottled and bond bourbon, and raise a glass to the Tyler Perry commitment. Whichever is your poison of choice, just go support Holiday Distillery. They support us, so please support them. Great K-State folks that I'm sure are fired up right now, too. But look, it's been a while since it feels like, I mean, I know the David Castillo thing was not that long ago, but the portal, I guess, has been kind of exhausting, right? I mean, you've had this long Max Asemus recruitment that didn't go your way. People have been wondering, like, why are you not going after wings? Like, it felt like, you know, they didn't get Cryer. It's competing at a high level in the portal is a very arduous process. And K-State now finally has a really, really bright, shiny piece to show for it in landing Tyler Perry here. So I guess a part of me wants to just start and say, like, it's kind of like an exhale moment. Like, all right, let's go. You have one of those big-time players that you were pursuing, and it is very, very exciting to see that and have some rewards to show for all the work, DY, that went into portal season so far for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, part of me understands the panic for fans because you're still so deep in the process without anyone, you know, laying claim to a Kansas State spot. You still have four spots left, but I can also take you back to last year where it was a little bit more unsettling and things still worked out. So I think the staff has probably earned a lot of trust and patience at this point. And I would just continue to urge fans to exercise that first and foremost. But in the Tyler Perry thing, I think that was also a reason why this staff isn't, they'll never panic, but that's definitely why they weren't, a reason why they weren't panicking, because just my assessment and impression of how this process has unfolded. And we're talking about the Conference USA Player of the Year. This is nobody to sneeze at. Like you said, the number two transfer overall, according to The Athletic. Just don't look at on three rankings. No, just kidding, because he's the lowest on there at number 20. Still a top 20 transfer. I mean, I think he only had one top 20 transfer a year ago, if that. Not sure where Keyonte Johnson ended up finishing in the rankings. But I think all along they felt that this was kind of in their back pocket and that there was no need to rush to panic or, you know, kind of squirm a little bit because they knew that they had one of the best transfers in the entire country coming their way. It was hard for fans probably to understand that because it wasn't a typical recruitment. Like Tyler Perry, I think, was in conversations with Kansas State the entire time, but he didn't include Kansas State on his list the entire time. Not until there was a Final Four, and you probably had to be a KSO subscriber to really understand that that wasn't really anything to pay attention to until it got down to, you know, his last finalist, and then made those, what was the final visits to Kansas State and Ole Miss, I believe. He also visited Alabama, Arkansas, Florida. Florida, man, they probably made the biggest push of anyone. Texas Tech was right there, of course, too, and obviously that's where his coaching staff from North Texas is, and I'm not sure he even took a visit to Lubbock, but did to the, all those other SEC programs. It gives you like an exhale moment, some freedom there to operate with, and I think a feather in your cap too. Last year when they landed Keontae Johnson, it wasn't necessarily against the who's who of the basketball world just because of everything that went into that recruitment. This one, in combination with David Castillo winning that recruitment, is what you're seeing as kind of a product of the success that you just had. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't kind of reflect on his connection to Jareem Dowling, the Kansas State assistant that he played under at North Texas as well.
Well, and Cole, I don't mean to step in here and keep it 10 minutes before you can actually talk, but I know I've asked you this once before. Like, I still don't. Do we know why the recruitment was? It was just such a weird recruitment like that, where, yeah, early on you were telling people, like, no, they're in on Perry, even though they're not listed in like his top eight schools. And it went so long before K-State like came into the view of this. Is that because is it K-State's coaches trying to keep things on the down low with all of that? Is that what it is? Is there concern about, Texas Tech, obviously, Grant McCaslin, a lot of connections to Dream and those guys? Like, what are we thinking is the reasoning here?
Yeah, I don't know without a doubt, shadow of a doubt, 100%. So don't take my answer as gospel. But a few things kind of come into my mind. One being, and I know it doesn't necessarily make the most sense because he wasn't fearful of including Texas Tech, but I think including Kansas State, he felt and others felt that was probably going to be quite the tell of where his recruitment was headed. And that's probably the case. And I know it's not consistent with how he treated Texas Tech, considering he played for Grant McCaslin and Matt Brower in Denton. But at the time that he released his top four, and you see both Kansas State and Texas Tech, well, every insider and their brother just immediately said, oh, this one's done. It's going to K-State. So I think that was perhaps part of it, that he wanted to be considered available and not glossed over by any certain program. I think Kansas State also was probably, seesawing their prioritization of guards as well, and probably had conversations with him to say, keep this, maybe as concealed as you are willing to as well, because it's hard to balance out. I mean, because it wasn't, and I don't know if there was a 1, a 2, a 3, and a 4, or if it was 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D. I don't know that. But I know it. Sometimes that's hard to recruit all those guys at the same time, knowing that you only have a finite amount of spots and there's only one ball, too. So there was Max Asemus, there was Tyler Perry, but there was also Aaron Estrada during that recruitment as well.
Estrada. Don't get me started about Asemus and Estrada, guys. Go ahead, Cole. Save me from myself.
Well, on the note of Estrada, guys, so Tyler Perry had an offensive rating of 1.25 last season at North Texas. That would have ranked number 54 nationally. Here are the offensive ratings of other guards that K-State chased in the portal. Max Asemus, 1.23, lower than Tyler Perry. LJ Cryer, a 1.18. Aaron Estrada, a 107.5. Yikes, that's pretty low. Jameer Nelson Jr., K-State didn't chase him, but he was one of the top 5-6 guards in the portal, went to TCU, a 105.8. Jalen Cook, The Tulane transfer point guard that was very highly sought after has an offensive rating of 1.06. Walter Clayton, Iona transfer, went to Florida, 1.19. Jalen Cohn, another top transfer guard, 1.09. Tyler Perry had a better offensive rating than all of those guys last year. Max Asmus, during their junior seasons the year prior, had a 1.16 offensive rating, and Tyler Perry had a 1.23. And if you want to compare it to like Marquise Noel, and keep in mind, obviously, Marquise is going up against significantly harder competition in the toughest league in America, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. But Marquise's offensive rating this year was 1.13, Tyler Perry had a 1.25. So to put that into perspective, I mean, you could make an argument that Tyler Perry is actually the best guard that K-State chased in the transfer portal. He's an elite offensive player. Bart Torvik has a stat that's called points over replacement. PRPG is the acronym for it. It's become popular over the past few years. It was developed to better incorporate usage rate, and it essentially measures how many points a player contributes to his team over the course of a game over what a replacement player would provide. It adjusts for the strength of opponent, pace of play, usage, etc. Tyler Perry had a PRPG of 5.5 this season, which was tied for 13th best in the entire country. Some of the guys that were in front of him were Zach Edey, Jalen Pickett, Trace Jackson Davis of Indiana, Drew Timmy, Chris Murray, Oscar Tshiebwe, all of these guys, All-American status. Out of all the players remaining in the transfer portal currently, Paris has the highest points over replacement at 5.5. The next closest is Ray J. Dennis, the talented guard out of Toledo that just recently entered the portal, and Hunter Dickinson at a 5.0. Out of all of the players who've entered the transfer portal this offseason, Perry's points over replacement of 5.5 was the second best. For perspective, Max Asmus, 5.2. So this is a very, very talented guard, an elite shot maker, one of the best three-point shooters in America, 41.3% from three this past season, ranking 18th best in the country. Over his last two seasons, 184 out of 445 from three, and a consistent average of 41% from three. And he shot 44% from three in his two seasons at Coffeyville Community College. So if you factor all of those numbers combined over four seasons between JUCO and at North Texas, he's a combined 343 out of 807 from three, which is an average of 42.5% from beyond the arc in four seasons. And just this last year, seventh in the country with 112 three-point makes. So elite scorer, elite shot maker, and now he's going to a better offensive system in the Big 12 at Kansas State with Jerome Tang and playing a much faster pace.
So I was about to say, Cole, like, he did all this, and like, Grant McCaslin has this reputation of playing this like slow, methodical, plodding brand of basketball, like kind of a boring, I guess, close your ears, Tech fans, just kind of a boring brand of basketball. Now, they've been successful doing it, but yeah, you would think that some of those numbers would stand to go up and improve. I mean, maybe it's offset by the fact that you're going to be in the Big 12, but I'm sure for him, it has to be appealing looking at what K-State's offense looked like last year and saying like, hey, man, I get to come to this now all of a sudden instead of what I was doing at North Texas.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think so. I mean, North Texas, less than 62 possessions per game last season, dead last in the country, 363rd, and they were 357th out of 358 teams in 2021-22 in pace at 62 possessions per game. So, yeah, I think the pace, that's a big factor. You know, you also have to think about it, guys, like, these are impressive numbers given what Conference USA was this year. This is a much better league than it's been in the past. I mean, you remember FAU, unfortunately, in their Final Four run. That's a team that won 35 games, top 25 team. North Texas won the NIT, Tyler Perry's team, and they were playing UAB, another Conference USA team that was in the NIT championship as well. Charlotte won the CBI, another Conference USA team. Jeff Sagarin, I think, rates Conference USA around 10th in the country out of the 33 conferences this last year in terms of performance. UAB, FAU, and North Texas were all top 50 KenPom teams. If you look at the net rankings, those three teams were all in the top 40 of the final net rankings. So a good league that he did this against this year. And you could look at games like against FAU, for example. He played FAU two times. And as I mentioned, that's number 17 team. And KenPom went to the Final Four, obviously. And in the games against FAU, those two games, he averaged 18.5 points per game on 52% shooting from the floor. and 53% from three in those two games. So, in fact, if you want to look at North Texas played 10 top 100 KenPom teams this year, guys. And in those 10 games, Tyler Perry averaged 21 points per game, shot 47% from the floor, and 43% from three. So a guy that's done it against tougher competition. His junior year, he scored 23 against KU on a neutral court, shooting 50% from the floor. So he can do it against anybody. He's an elite shot maker. And, you know, one of the things that he's really great at, guys, he can make shots all over the floor, logo threes, just like Marquise, can shoot on the move, shoot off the dribble. He made 45% of his shots off the bounce this season per Synergy. He was the second most efficient shooter in the country off the dribble among players with at least 100 attempts this last season.
It's all great, man, and I think underscores the point. Like, this dude is a dynamic scorer, whereas, you know, everybody was so locked into the recruitment of Max Asmus between K-State and Texas there down at the end. Much more like distributor point guard kind of a guy as opposed to, I mean, obviously can score too, but that's not what Perry is going to be, right? Different sorts of players here. DY, a couple of things I think that just need to be differentiated here. One, I would say different style of player here and what you're getting in Perry. They definitely would have taken both of those guards and loved to have them. And then two, I think Cole and all of us have done a pretty good job of underscoring the point here. Like, you, it should not be like, oh, this is like a disappointment that you're getting Perry and not Asmus. For whatever reason, the Asmus recruitment just really took off so much, and maybe the fact that it was Texas that you were up against, I don't know. It just, the way that recruitment played out, it felt like everybody was so much more invested in that than what has happened with Perry here, which can be unfair to him in some ways when you look at it and say, hey, a lot of people would tell you that this was actually the better get of the two.
Yeah, at least ranking-wise, there's not much differentiation between the two, Max Asmus and Tyler Perry, but they are two different players. And I can understand the argument that maybe the style of Max Asmus or the component that he would have, you know, provided Kansas State with is probably more of a necessity at this point. Just because you don't have a lot of creators or facilitators, distributors, guys that can create for others and themselves left on this prospect, who is Marquise Noel, who basically provided 95% of that a year ago. So you're missing that element, and you're not necessarily replacing it with Perry. But what you're replacing with Perry is a lot more scoring than he probably got off the ball, unless he steps in, you know, maybe he's like the Keontae Johnson to whoever becomes that creator. I don't know. But yeah, entirely two different players. And Perry is more scorer than anything. A little bit on the smaller side for a guy that would play off the ball, of course, too. So you got to take that into the equation. Look, if you're discussing, you say undersized guy that'll probably play the two, then are we really saying anyone that's much different than Nigel Pack? They're not 100% identical, but there's probably a good amount of crossover between their games to at least mention that, because Nigel Pack, not really a one either, a guy that could definitely score the basketball off the dribble with relative ease as well. So, and they're both going to have, I guess I would say, similar defensive limitations, although I would argue that maybe Tyler Perry is a better defender than Nigel Pack, and that's probably a sigh of relief. And maybe you want a little bit more size at the one if you have the luxury of doing so, if you're Kansas State. Not that it's necessarily a requirement if you have Naquan Tomlin and another good rim protector playing the five. But that's things that would cross my mind with that. And I know other people are also going to continue to scream about defense when you're playing, you know, a guy that's 5'11", 6 foot at the two. But one thing, and I think I've mentioned it in multiple group chats that I'm in, is that Myles Worry is a sneaky good asset here that's probably being overlooked a bit. Yes, the defensive limitations are present, but he's played in this defensive scheme longer than anyone on the roster too. And I'm sure that's going to be an advantage that they could, or something that they can take advantage of. Because remember, being in North Texas, he's played in this defense for two and a half seasons now.
Let's hit on that real quick, DY, because I've seen some people concerned about Tyler Perry's defense just because of his size. And if that'll be a concern, Perry ranks in the top 10 among remaining mid-major transfers in adjusted defensive rating per Bartorvik. He had a defensive rating of 95 last season. That's really good. In his 2 years at North Texas, he had a defensive rating of 94. That's better than anyone on K-State's team this past season.
Yeah, and I think that's important to note. And the only asterisk I would put on that is he has benefited by playing in a great defense. Like, that, just their team defense helps him out with that rating as well.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be at least a decent defensive player, though, to play for Grant McCaslin in North Texas. You mentioned it. I mean, they were 18th in the country in Ken Palm defense last season, 22nd the prior year. So defense is a huge factor in that. I just want to note just a couple other things that I love about Tyler Perry, guys, and I think probably why K-State's coaching staff was in love with him as well. This dude is a winner, all right? He went 53-11 in his two seasons at Coffeyville Community College, won the junior college national title as a sophomore there. He scored 18 and had 11 assists, or 7 assists, I'm sorry, in the JUCO title game, and was named the MVP of the NJCCA tournament, the JUCO national tournament. I can't say the acronym, but he was the MVP of the JUCO national tournament. And at North Texas, he led the team in scoring each of the last two seasons, leading North Texas to a 31-7 record this past year in an NIT championship. His junior year, they went 25-7. In Conference USA, he was part of two teams that went a combined 32-6 in league play, including winning the regular season conference title last season in 2021-22, so the season prior. Overall, in his four-year career, he's 109-25, won 81% of his games. His senior year of high school, he made the game-winning buzzer-beating three in the state quarterfinals, scored 37 in that game to lead them there. And one other thing, I mean, he'll do whatever it takes to win. I mean, in 2021-22, as a junior at North Texas, he made Conference USA all-first team and was the league's sixth man of the year. He played 31 games, but he started just one. He was willing to come off the bench despite leading North Texas in points per game at 13.5. And there's a huge clutch factor here, guys. So, you know, I'm not going to say he's Marquise Noel, but this is a guy that comes up in the biggest moments. His junior year, he made a game-tying or game-winning basket in the final 4 seconds of 5 different games. That was his junior year. This last year, he shot nearly 60% from 3 late in games. So this is a guy that, you know, really comes up big in the biggest moments and on the biggest stages in games.
What qualifies as, I'm just curious here, Cole. I don't mean to put you on the spot. What qualifies as late in games?
I believe it's at the under 4. I was trying to completely clarify that as I was researching it, but I believe it's the under 4 minute mark that he was shooting nearly 60% from 3. And he's also, like, we talk about an elite shooter. I mean, 87% from the free throw line this last season. In his 2 years at North Texas, he shot nearly 86%. If you count Coffeyville as well, he's 498 of 593 from the foul line over his 4 years at 84%. And he had a free throw rate, guys, of 44, which is free throw attempts divided by field goal attempts. That's a really good free throw rate. If you want to get it into perspective here, again, I mentioned other guys chasing in the portal. Aaron Estrada had a free throw rate of 19, Max A. Smith, 33, LJ Cryer, 18, Jalen Cook, 27, et cetera. Marquise Noel this last year had a free throw rate of right around 44, so right around where Tyler Perry's at. Noel's career free throw rate is 34. So this is a guy that gets to the foul line a lot as well, and he knocks him down.
Yeah, that being the point there to underscore that free throw rate. Like, he's getting to the line a lot. He shoots it excellently from the free throw line. Great three-point shooter, clutch, has come up in huge moments, wins, unselfish, lots of traits to really, really love about this guy. And the primary competition here, I mean, being like Florida, Ole Miss, Texas Tech, like, I guess my last question here before we take a break and get off of the Perry discussion, DY, I'm like, I'm listening to that, and I'm like, I know what, wouldn't there have been even, you know, that's pretty solid level of competition, but why is this guy not like a total national recruitment sort of dude out of the portal?
I think you can make the argument that he is. I mean, Alabama was number one for how long? Arkansas wanted him and would have taken him, and they are probably the best team in the portal. Okay. I Duke and Kentucky are pretty liberal when it comes to the portal, I think, and how they go about it too. So Texas, you know, they kind of locked in on Max A. Smith. I guess I'm Gonzaga knew they had Nimhard, right? So I think there was probably about 8 to 10 guys that were probably on the same platform, and you had the best programs chase them.
Arkansas and Bama, those are good points, and I guess I wasn't aware, didn't pay enough attention to that being a part of that, because, I mean, Arkansas goes after anybody really good in the portal and seemingly lands everybody. I don't know. Arkansas, I feel like, is going to roll out with a roster of 30 guys next year, so somehow they continue to do that. And obviously, Bama, I mean, it felt like K-State was butting up against Alabama with about everybody that they've been chasing in the portal so far. So, look, the Max Asemus recruitment did not go the way K-State wanted it to. He is headed to Texas. We'll break that down coming up next.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Make sure you download our new app. Find it on the App Store or Google Play. Just search KC Sports Network.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
All right, on the Max Asemus front, I was like, luckily it did not ruin draft night because Felix wound up going on the last pick of the night to the Chiefs. But I was sitting there like, dude, Max, can you read the room, buddy? Like, you got to throw this out there at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock on Thursday, like right going into the draft. I enjoy the draft a lot. It was in Kansas City. I was all excited, fired up to go. And then I've got to read your I'm coming home post right in the middle of all that. Like, come on. It was disappointing. That was, I don't know. I feel like it was beyond just the player. It's like the fact that you're going up against Texas. I mean, it's a school in the league that you know you're going to play, and it's Texas. We all hate Texas. You wanted to see. This was just one I really wanted for Tang to, for recruiting prowess sake. I mean, honestly, a lot of things that are probably stupid that I kind of cared about too much. I think we were all sort of invested in it. From that standpoint. So, I don't know, D.Y., take us through just the aftermath of this and what it all means that K-State missed out on Asemus.
The importance of it was that he was kind of the creator, high-usage player that they kind of need to backfill what they've lost from a year ago. But I guess one thing I want to tackle personally, I guess, to start this off is that it wasn't time wasted. It wasn't as if they were locked in on him and just let other people go. They still did their homework on other people. They were still pursuing others, even if it wasn't on the surface. To call it a mistake to chase the number two player in the entire transfer portal and come up just short is asinine. I think they nearly pulled this off for it to be a 50-50 battle between the Wildcats and Longhorns. It probably started off much more in favor of Texas than even that in the beginning, because I know, you know, folks that were much more plugged into the Asemus recruitment than I, at least at the start, just considered it a slam dunk by Texas. And then even they had to back off of that a little bit towards the middle of that process because Kansas State had made such a large impression on he and his family. So to call it a waste of time is just asinine, and they you want to compete for Final Fours and championships. These are the kinds of battles that you have to win. And you can't win them unless you're willing to take those risks and win them, because you recruit at this level, there's going to be the heartbreak. This is the recruiting level required to win at this level. And you have to pursue these guys. And guess what? That means it is going to be more heartbreak. It does mean more nationally recognized losses, but it also means more nationally recognized wins too. At no point in the past were they landing, according to The Athletic, the number two transfer player in the entire country, or according to every recruiting service, the top 30 high school player, David Castillo. With great wins comes great losses. Do you think Duke bats 100% in every year? They do not. They lose kids. Everybody does. So it was not a waste of time. Those are the things you got to do, but you got to backfill afterwards to make up for that loss. And look, they're going to lay in Tyler Perry, what, 4 or 5 days later. So not at all concerned. It probably came down to him feeling like playing close to home was probably, if I were to read between the lines, play close to home probably broke the tie between the two, because I think he felt usage-wise at Texas, there was probably a pretty good fit there. I think they sold that pretty well from what I understand. And at Kansas State, he probably looked at last year, was like, man, I can go in there and be Marquise Noel, and they sold that well. And I think he was pretty bought into that idea. So I think that's probably what had him torn. He liked the presentation of both sides, and at the end of the day, what's going to be the tiebreaker? And I think it probably ended up being that he's from Dallas, played at Jesuit High School. Texas pretty easy to get to for anyone who wants to watch him to play. So I think that's what ultimately it came down to. But this was a worthwhile pursuit if you're Kansas State.
Well, now that Rodney Terry has fumbled away every single member of his 2023 recruiting class, I mean, there's plenty of minutes around there for Max A. Smith to go play. You know, I mean, great job, Rodney. But yeah, I will just tack this on too, D.Y., to what you were saying about the time wasted thing. And I know fans are going to fan, but like, have we learned anything? I mean, we learned last year and at the beginning of this year with the Tyler Perry recruitment that we've been talking about. Like, these guys tend to move in the shadows, you know, when it comes to recruitment. They're pretty good at, when they want to, keeping things under wraps when they're working. It's why, you know, the entire recruitment process last year was Cole stalking Instagram accounts. And I say that only half jokingly, but that's like the only thing you can glean from them is like who they wind up following and trying to trace those trails. Like, they're still moving on guys. They're still doing work. And then the other thing is just patience. You know what I mean? Patience. Last year, that was the key lesson, was patience. And Tang has talked about that there may have been some doubt at points, but it worked out. I guess you could come back and say, well, hey, is it going to work out like that every year? I mean, I don't know, but we have definitely seen that more high-profile guys wind up leaving later in the process. It's not just all about shooting everything that you've got out there at the first crop that leaves, because then you can wind up in real trouble and you've already got guys filled up with spots, and then somebody huge enters late in the process. You're not able to get like a Keyontae Johnson, for instance, because you would have just taken like a mid sort of wing forward at one point. You would have been in a really bad spot there. So yeah, I'm fully with you. I support that point that you were making 100%.
Real quick, it's the transformation of that mindset that Jerome Tate's been trying to do for an entire year, where Kansas State kind of, you know, some of the fans are still stuck in a certain time frame, time period, whatever it may be, a little smaller thinking that if you don't get this, that means you have to drop all the way down to here. It's not that. You think Kansas might miss out on Hunter Dickinson? They already missed out on Harrison Ingram. Do you think that they're panicking? Do you think that they're feeling very troubled by their situation? They are not. And the Kansas State fans that are panicking, they hear that, they're like, well, they're KU. Well, that's the problem. They don't want you to think that way. They want you to think that they're right there with KU and they can do the same, you know, kind of shit, right? You miss on a kid, you come back and you get another really good one. They feel like they can do that. They feel they have that confidence about them that they can do that, and they've already proved that they can do that before. So, yeah. You take big swings, you miss, you go take another big swing. Or you take a big swing and you get a kid like Tyler Perry, like David Castillo, and you don't have to panic. You don't fret because you know you're good enough to go and get another good kid. That's what the good teams do. And Jerome Tang's trying to tell the fans, we're a good team that can do that.
I think some fans have a mindset of go after the guys you know you can get, right? And you got to transform that mindset. I mean, I hope no one listening takes it personal, but I think that's a loser mindset. You got to swing big. And this staff thinks they can go up and beat anybody on the recruiting trail. And people that think that way probably thought that they were wasting their time with David Castillo until the moment they landed him, right? And then look, now they're all excited. You got a top 30 guy, one of the best point guard recruits in America, coming in next season in 2024 because they swung big and they won that recruitment. Look at them being mentioned now with Ron Holland, one of the top five players in America who just decommitted from Texas, and they're listed as one of the six or seven teams by John Rothstein as players in that recruitment. I mean, in the past, K-State wouldn't have targeted those types of guys because they would have thought, oh, there's no chance of winning it. But that's just recruiting, and if you swing big, like DY said, you're going to miss on some of the top tiers, but I'd rather them go for the home runs and have that winner's mindset that they can win those recruiting battles. And so I think it's a great thing, and it's definitely not time wasted. I mean, you batted 50% between Max Asmus and Tyler Perry. If you want to include Estrada, you could, but didn't get him to visit. So, yeah, you swing 33% even on top transfers. That's a great number.
Yeah, well, and, you know, even if you include Cryer and say, hey, it was 1-for-4. I mean, if you're think about the competition you're up against for all of those guys. Like, it's Alabama, it's Texas, it's Houston. Like, these are great elite programs right now, and that's not really that bad of a percentage when you're swimming in those types of waters. And yeah, I mean, just the fact that we're having that conversation after where things were a year ago and the waters that they were swimming in then to where we are now is unbelievable. And you throw another year of another really good season, and then look at the portal next year and see what waters they're swimming in. I mean, it's incredibly, incredibly exciting. So yeah, nothing but optimism for me on that front.
Do you think Baylor panicked because they weren't getting Max Asmus? No, they went and got Jaden Nunn, or going to get Jaden Nunn. I don't know if he's announced. And there's a pretty big gap between Asmus and Nunn that's probably wider than that of Asmus and Tyler Perry. So, like, what are we doing here? I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sucks. Would have loved to have landed Asmus. Here's the good news. You get a chance to go beat him into the ground this year out on the court. You can go beat him and take Ronnie Terry to that.
I know you are too. You've been boiling with Texas hate ever since this happened. So
I'm not sure what you're talking about, D.Y. I'm nice and happy, man. Very, very cheery. I'm just celebrating Tyler Perry, okay? There's no negative energy here from me at all. It's a celebration of Tyler Perry. And hey, maybe Keontae Johnson celebration. No, we'll talk about Keontae and his prospects coming up next.
You're listening to KC Sports Network. We'll be right back after this. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Okay, so speaking of the portal, one thing that has been a question a lot of people have asked is, like, what about wings? Like, with Keontae going to the draft, which was assumed to be a formality for a long time, he finally did put out that note saying that he was going to declare the day of the deadline. Most people assuming that the whole time, you're like, okay, well, you're obviously going to go need a wing or a forward. Why is there no real mention of that? It didn't seem like K-State was being mentioned for anybody. You have the Tyson kid from Texas Tech that, you know, Kansas is heavily involved in the recruitment of now, and you wonder, like, why isn't K-State jumping in on that? Well, now we see Keontae at the end of his post about going to the draft. He says, but I am going to keep my college eligibility. And you start to think, like, oh, well, that's interesting here. I mean, a lot of the talk on Keontae would be maybe kind of a tweener, second round pick. It's not like this is going to be a ton of super guaranteed money. Can put together pretty nice NIL packages for kids. Like, is this what they're thinking? Like, hey, there might be a legitimate chance that Keontae comes back, and thus the patience part once again. That is why they have not been heavily pursuing a wing. How much legitimacy is there to that theory here, DY?
I think there is legitimacy to it. It just differs on the extent of how likely it is, and that depends on who you talk to, really. I hear from a couple of different angles that it's definitely something that is under consideration if some of the NBA draft discussion isn't favorable to him or to his satisfaction. And then I still hear others that say, you know, it's probably still a 1% chance or less situation where he would return to college. So I'm not really putting my name on anything on how this is going to unfold, on what the outcome will be. And that means I'm not even prepared to say that I'm ready to put my name on him not coming back, because I think both scenarios are still in play. You know, I just haven't heard a concrete enough, you know, statement from any real perfect source on the matter to suggest that I really know which direction it's going to go. But what I am safe with saying right now is that I think both items are in play, both items are being considered, and I don't know which one is more likely than the other, but I would still lean towards him going the professional route, but I still don't know that that's really been determined at this point.
I would say it's the chances of him returning are obviously a lot better than any of us probably thought during the season or after the season. I would say it's closer to 50-50 than I would have ever imagined. I'm not going to say it's 50-50, but I think it is somewhat close to that number. I mean, I think there's a real possibility here based off information that we have that this is something that he has seriously considered. And I mean, DY, you followed the NBA probably a little closer than I do. Second round contracts in the NBA, they're not guaranteed, right? I mean, a lot of these guys, if you're drafted in the second round, you don't get a guaranteed deal. You're not guaranteed to make the team or anything.
Well, I think that's really up to the club, but I don't think it's common for sure.
Yeah, and so a lot of those second round guys, they get cut or end up in the G League, right? And the G League salary is, I think, under 200K. I don't know. The NIL package K-State could offer is going to be more than what the G League would be. I'll just say that. So we'll see what happens, but that there could be some legitimacy to why they're not really chasing any wings right now. I believe the NBA Combine is May 15th through the 21st. I assume Keontae will get an invite to that, and then we'll have an idea. The deadline, I believe, is June 12th for him to pull out. I think we'll have a pretty good idea close to the end of May where he stands in the NBA process and make a decision.
To pull out and still have college eligibility, I believe it's May 31st.
Okay. So even sooner. So Memorial Day weekend, when you guys are out at the lake, you know, at Council Grove City Lake with me, we'll be popping bottles, celebrating Keontae coming back, boys.
Hopefully it's warm by then, right? And Ted,
I'll jump in an ice cold lake, if Keontae comes back.
Well, so I guess the question here then, DY, becomes, so what, and this is a part where I probably should know these things, but as far as like portal windows opening and closing, like, so if Keontae is to stay in the draft, like depending on when they figure that out, like what are the options there? What are the time frames of them when you can start searching for a replacement if they're not going to do that as of right now?
I would imagine they're doing that, but
okay. They're just doing it in the shadows, you think, right now?
That, or they just got someone on the, you know, the back oven there just waiting. You know, you never know. Like, there's two guys worth mentioning here because their futures, I don't think, have been 100% determined. I don't know that. I think here's one: Dylan Mitchell, right, from Texas. He was recruited by Eric Malagi at Kansas State. Not in the transfer portal yet, so I don't think that there's no contact being had here, but he is in the NBA draft, I believe. I think he declared for the NBA draft. And so, but he's not a graduate transfer. So Texas is not certain that he's coming back next year, whether that's portal or draft. That I think most people are aware of that. He has 10 days because the basketball transfer window closes on May 11th. So if May 11th comes and goes and he's not in the portal, then it's Texas or NBA for him. So that's one name to consider. He's a wing. Julian Phillips, right? Kansas State recruited him at the tail end. He played for Rodney Perry for a little bit. He is not in the transfer portal either. Tennessee is still, I think, jockeying back and forth with him whether that's going to happen or not. So it's kind of a similar situation as Dylan Mitchell, but at Tennessee. And again, he is in the NBA draft. Does he stay? And they both could just stay in the draft too. That wouldn't shock me just because of their upside. I think both could still get into that back end of that first round. But that's two wings maybe worth at least monitoring if you're Kansas State whether or not they enter the transfer portal in the next 10 days. So that kind of answers your question. There's 10 days for someone to enter the transfer portals between now and May 11th. And another thing two things. May 11th is the deadline to enter the transfer portal. These guys can still make decisions after May 11th. That's not a commitment deadline.
Right.
An entry deadline. Also, graduate transfers don't have that deadline. They can enter the transfer portal at any time and still be eligible to play games in this upcoming season. So, and I'm not trying to put this out there because I don't think it's happening, but technically Keontae Johnson could enter the transfer portal at any point and be eligible next year.
The last thing I was going to say about him, he still has to get a waiver, right? If he's going to play this upcoming
year,
everyone just assumes that would happen because of his health situation.
Right. He has to get a waiver because he played for 4 seconds for Florida on senior night.
Yeah, he'd get that. He would get that waiver. The NCAA would be burned to the ground, pitchforks at their front door if they denied something along those lines. I mean, it's an important point to make that, Jerome Tang said on the pod last year with us shortly after he took the job, that some of the best players enter the portal right up against that deadline. Because those are guys that there's kind of a tier of guys, and those are the guys coaches are really fighting hard to keep. So there's likely over the next 10 days still going to be some talented dudes that enter the portal. And as DY just alluded to, I mean, some of these guys that are in the NBA draft process right now, they didn't announce they were entering the portal. There's a very good chance some of them announce in the next 10 days they're going to come back and they're going to enter the portal, or they're going to enter the portal and stay in the NBA draft process still. So there's still things to be decided, and this coaching staff has a general idea from their sources and intel with how connected these guys are on some of the dudes that are going to be entering the portal potentially. So I'm not worried. I think they're probably in on a couple of dudes that we're not aware of. And I'll just say that IG stalking has become much more challenging. They are operating more in the shadows with that too. I don't have much action to report over the last few weeks to any of you guys over that.
Well, one last question, DY, and this would have been placed better with the A-Smith discussion, but as far as point guards go, do we have immediate signs here of other guys that they're chasing there outside of some that they might be waiting on, as we talked about, in the next 10 days?
I know things are happening. I'll be honest. I'm not going to pretend like I know something I don't. I don't know any names I can throw any at you right now. I'm not going to pretend to know, but obviously I think that they have stuff in the works that I just don't know about.
I mean, Ray J. Dennis, the Toledo guard, is the MAC player of the year. He entered the portal just recently. Yurik Malagi followed him shortly after, but I think most people can consider he's going to be a lock to Illinois, and Brad Underwood, he's from Illinois. So we'll see. The longer that goes, though, that he hasn't committed, maybe K-State can get involved.
I like it. I like it. Would love to. It'd be nice to be Brad for a dude, huh? Yeah, it'd be fucking away.
You did mention Texas. The kid that decommitted from Texas, Ron Holland, too. And I guess technically he would be a wing, I believe. So maybe
you don't. And it's weird we don't think about it in the same way because I'm a high school kid versus the portal. Like, the portal is so in vogue now, but you're right. Yeah, he's the one just recently decommitted from Texas shortly after the ace mistakes.
Yeah, so yep. That could be a wing target.
Could be an option, too. All right. So, everybody, just patience. Patience. They're swimming in some very talented waters here, and I've definitely got faith that you're gonna like the roster that comes together. Especially, I mean, just think of what they've got right now already, which includes Tyler Perry, the reason for this episode. So, congrats to Tyler. Congrats to K-State and the coaching staff for landing him. And we will be talking to you soon. Appreciate Jordan Foote behind the scenes as always. Thank you to Holiday Distillery. Get your 360 vodka. Get your Ben Holiday bottled and bond bourbon. Stock up and support those who support us. For Derek Young and Cole Manbeck, I'm John Kurtz. Thanks for listening to another episode of 3 Ball.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all 6 of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou, by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop.
Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.